Okay, everyone.
I heard that
the recording has started.
I don't think we lost anybody.
Samson?
No.
We gained someone. We gained some.
Yes, I'm still here.
Samson's
good.
Here. Annie's here. Elsie?
Yes.
Sandy? Okay. Did someone else join?
Denise.
All right.
And where are you? Great. And where are you from?
Minnesota.
Minnesota.
Okay, great. Well, we're going to go ahead and start. I'm Duncan Larson. I direct the senior services at the Colorado Center for the Blind, and I have been a member of the NFB since, I guess it was about 1979. And then also on the call is Diane McGeorge, and I'll let you introduce yourself, Diane.
Well, it's great to be here this afternoon. This is the first time Duncan and I have been hosting the call. I am a volunteer with the senior services that we have in Colorado at the Colorado Center for the Blind, and I've been a member of the NFB since I'm as old as dirt, and so I've been an NFB member for as long as we've had dirt, so I've been around a long time. So I fit right into the seniors division, but it's going to be a good call today. We hope you all have lots of comments, questions, things to share with us. That's what we'll be doing today.
And Diane is also, in addition to volunteering for the senior program, she's the founder of the Colorado Center for the Blind and the chair of the board. So Diane has many experiences, a lot of words of wisdom for us.
Well, I don't know about that, but I've worked with every age that there is, I think, from infants to toddlers to the BEL program that we have, and so it's just such a real pleasure to be involved with the NFB, and I've just met so many great people, and today I'm getting to meet some more new ones, so that's perfect.
Well, that's great. So one of the things that we've really learned in our work with seniors and with people of other ages is that when someone becomes blind or is in the process of losing vision, it doesn't just affect that person. It affects the family as well. The whole family needs to deal with it, needs to understand blindness, but also needs to understand and deal with their loved one. And, you know, we have groups that meet at our center every week. Groups of seniors come in, and we always have discussions on topics related to blindness. And very, very often, the topics, even if we start on something different, it comes around to how do I deal better with my family? How do I deal with my friends? There are so many questions. How do I disclose that I'm now blind and I wasn't? How does that happen? And so we have lots of questions. I have many, many questions that I was talking with my seniors the other day and explaining that Diane and I would be doing this call, and they just came up with a whole list of questions and topics to discuss around relationships with friends and family members. So, you know, one of the things that people say is that sometimes their relationships have changed after they've become blind. And some people say that, you know, they don't feel that they have the friends that they used to have. Some people say that their family members are hovering and are trying to be very protective and not allowing them to do things on their own. So, you know, I think we want this to be very interactive and have discussions around these things. And maybe some of you who are on the call have specific things that you want to talk about.
Fanny speaking.
Yes.
Well, I think it is true that you do lose a little bit of your friends, because I think in a way that they don't know how to accept your blindness or your vision loss. Don't care whether it's a lot or little. They just see you as, we can't do the things that we used to do with you anymore. So it does create a little bit of obstacle and a lot of understanding and patience. And even around with your family, too, because your family, they have to be around you quite a bit also. And they might not be aware of what a blind person can really do as an individual. And although sometimes you think of these things, but yet you still haven't really comprehend what they mean until it really falls on your backyard, as to so speak.
Okay. Thank you. I do think that the more comfortable you are or anybody is with their blindness, the more comfortable everybody else is. And so that would be something that I would suggest. You know, I think that the people who are very comfortable and really accept their blindness and feel positive about themselves do tend to have very strong relationships with people. And people aren't afraid to ask them pointed questions about blindness. Would you agree
and
with that, Diane?
I think it deals with your generation, too, because sometimes the generation that was before you and the experience if they had with interacting with another blind person, that always affects the next person that comes along and they meet that are blind.
That's very true, and it isn't just generational. It certainly is. Some of that is generational, but some of it is, too. We all have blind friends, I think we all do, who have a lot of different skills and can do some things that we don't necessarily know how to do or haven't learned how to do. We're probably smart enough to learn it, but we just haven't had the opportunity. So the other extreme, which I don't think you see as much, but the other extreme is, well, I have a blind friend, and he can just do anything. Well, nobody can just do
just
everything.
Amazing.
Yeah, he's just amazing. Mm-hmm. Nobody can do everything, blind or sighted. And I think one way to help our friends and our family, but certainly our friends that we see at church once a week, or we see at Lions Club once a week or somewhere where we go, is to say, you know, I'd like to let you know that I am the same person. I understand. I may not see you now if you wave at me or smile at me, but if you'll come up and say, oh, hi, I'm Susan, and it's good to see you here, or just, hi, how are you this morning? I think that helps put them at ease. Now, you can't just walk into a room and say that, but supposing you're with somebody at a club meeting and they say, oh, there's Joan. I think it's fine for us to say, well, I'd love to say hi to Joan. So we go to Joan and we say, Joan, hi, I'm so glad to see you here. Don't worry about people worry about using the word see. They feel very shy about using the word see sometimes. So I think Duncan's absolutely correct. The more comfortable we are with our blindness, and naturally, some of us who've been blind a long time, well, some of us are comfortable, some of us are not. It's all individual. But when you don't lose your sight until you're in your 70s or even your 80s, it takes a while to become comfortable with yourself. I work with a lot of students, different ages, losing their sight, and I say to them, you know, your self-worth has nothing to do with your visual acuity. So don't relate that to how much you can see or how much you cannot see. You're the same person you always were. So gaining that level of comfort takes some time. It takes some thought. You know, it really does. That doesn't just drop into our heads. Oh, wow, I'm blind. I feel great about that. Mm-hmm. Most people don't feel real great about that. We didn't any of us wake up one day and say, oh, I wish I was blind. It would be so much fun. Yeah. But when we do start losing our sight, learning these new ways of doing things, that helps us become more comfortable with who we are.
You know,
and I think also,
you know,
go ahead, Samson.
Okay, thank you. You know, ladies, I think that it's reciprocal. If the people around you are comfortable in dealing with you as a blind individual, that in turn will make you feel more comfortable in doing whatever it is that you do, or just interacting with sighted people. You know, but if you're around a group of individuals that are always, that are constantly hovering or overly protective, you know, then that might make you a little nervous or self-conscious of your own abilities.
So let's talk about that whole thing of hovering, because that was one of the things my senior said. Talk to him about hovering. How do you deal with that when you feel like a family member is hovering to make sure you're not, I don't know, not going to
I guess you would have to more or less stop them right in the track and explain to them what the situation is and what you can do and what they are doing, because a lot of can be done because they're not aware of the even that they're hovering over you, or that, you know, they're causing more of a problem than they are helping. So that's when you have to say, wait, let me explain this to you and how better you could help me.
Okay,
that's good.
That's good. Communication. We always come down to communication and communicating well. One of the other things I was going to mention before is that when we were talking about comfort level and all that, is that one of the most important things to remember is that as a as a blind person, you don't have to be isolated. So many seniors experience vision loss, and they feel like they are the only people in the world who are dealing with it, even though they may know on one level that they're not. They don't know of anybody else who is. And so they feel very isolated, and it is hard to have positive beliefs about yourself if you're really isolated and have stopped doing things. So exactly what you're all doing today, calling in, being involved with the NSB, I think is those are really huge steps to, you know, having great attitudes about yourselves. So.
Well, I don't have a thing to add to that. Does anybody have anything that they do in particular along these lines that, no, Patty said, you know, to stop them in their tracks? I agree with her if they're doing too much for you. And you could do that in a polite way.
Yes.
Well, you know, or you can do it in a very impolite way, and you don't want to lose all your friends and family members. So I think it helps to be, you know, thoughtful of what they're saying. And I know she is. I can tell that from just the things she said here today. Sometimes people want to. Do things, I think, sometimes to make sure that we are safe. And I personally think we are good judges of what makes us safe. What do any of the rest of you think about that? We have seniors say, and they come to our groups all the time, and they hear all of these things that we're saying today, plus a lot of other things. But I've had one say very recently, oh, my daughter won't let me in the kitchen. My daughter won't let me in the kitchen. Now, any of you have that problem?
And I believe this is someone who's living with her daughter.
Right.
So
they live together.
Mm-hmm. Or she's, her daughter's living with her, whatever.
No, I don't have that particular problem because I live by myself. So I could go in the kitchen and do whatever I want to do anywhere.
Right.
Well, good for you.
This is Sandy, and I wonder what the daughter's response would be if the mother said, how would you feel if I said that to you, that you're not safe in my kitchen? Sometimes I think people say things and then they don't realize how awful that is. I mean, she isn't. What is it you think I'm going to do that is so unsafe? How am I unsafe in your kitchen?
That's a very good response. Mm-hmm. This woman has moved in with her daughter and son-in-law. I think there's a son. Yeah, there is a son-in-law in the house. Mm-hmm. And so it's the daughter's kitchen. And so I don't know if she would feel, but I think that's a very good response. You know, well, how would you feel if I said, you know, I don't want you to go in my kitchen? That, I think that would be a good thing to say.
And I think part of it, too, is what is the worst thing you think I can do in your kitchen? And let's talk about that. Why is that so bad? I mean, if you think it's that I don't have good control of the stove, then let's work it out. Let's figure it out. But I mean,
yeah, that really frightens a lot of family members that you're going to catch something on fire or you're going to turn it on and forget it and a pan is going to boil dry. You know, I think we think up so many things that are going to happen that never do happen.
Right.
And they just can't imagine how someone could use a sharp knife
right.
without seeing what they're cutting and that it could be safe. So I think there's a lot of fear around that, too.
And maybe this is what has to happen is you tackle one thing. This is what I want to do today.
Uh-huh.
And do that thing.
And I don't
want to
talk with them.
Just wait until an opportunity arrives, or you could just listen.
Okay. And then when this is done? Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, I'm Nancy Barnhart in Anchorage, Alaska.
Well, welcome,
hello, Nancy.
Is it snowing in Alaska?
No, not today. It's bright and sunny and beautiful.
Wonderful.
Oh, nice.
Well, we have a lot of snow.
Well, welcome. So, Nancy, we
joined.
Pardon me?
Susie Stanzel joined.
Oh, hi,
and I
Susie.
Had a couple other
hi,
people
Susie.
That I thought were going to join. Hello, this is the first one I've ever been on in the
well,
daytime.
Well, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you.
Can I turn the volume down?
So, for those of you who just joined,
okay,
we were discussing
the second.
When
okay.
family
thank you very
members
much.
Are so afraid of our safety. They don't want us to be in the kitchen using the stove, using the knives. How to deal with family members or friends, even. Who are very over, what we would think of as overprotective and hovering. So we're just getting ideas of, and Sandy had some great, great comeback comments.
So let me tell you folks, in case you don't know this, on this conference call, if you are doing something else while a call is going on, or if you want to talk with somebody who's in the room or something, you can mute your phone so that doesn't come across to us. You can mute your phone by pressing *6. Then you can hear us, but we can't hear what's going on in your house. And then when you want to say something, just press *6 again, and everyone will be able to hear you. Now, that hasn't happened so far, but if you do, you know, have something or you're expecting a phone call on your cell phone or whatever, that's kind of helpful to know. So how about more thoughts on feeling comfortable around our friends? They've known us, these are for people who lose their sight later on, and they've known us as sighted friends and coworkers, and then suddenly they hear, oh my goodness, she doesn't see very well anymore. How can we help them feel more at ease around us, or help us feel more at ease around them? Anyone have some thoughts?
I think it's by inviting them. If they're old friends, like somebody you've worked with for a long period of time, who've been used to you when you've had sight, and now all of a sudden, you know, things have changed with you, if you would invite them around, or just have conversation with them over the telephone, even when there's nothing going on. Just
uh-huh.
say, you know, I'm calling just to talk about this and get into a conversation with it.
Yep.
And as
That's
time
good.
Go on, they will be able to express the way they feel about your losing your sight and about, you know, how they had to adjust and say, you know, she's different now.
Okay.
So talking in a straightforward way with them about your change. Your life has changed.
This is Elsie in Virginia. What I do is what my mother used to do to me when she was losing her sight. I'm in my mid-80s, and I'm losing my sight now. But she would always say, let me do what I can do while I can still do it. And it usually
okay.
gets people to laughing, you know, and then they
right,
let me do what
right.
I can do.
Right.
Yeah. One of the seniors the other day said that she thinks humor is very helpful. Sometimes people will come up to her and say, oh, can I help you with this or can I help you with that? And she'll say to them, no, I don't need your help. I'm doing just fine, but, you know, I might someday. Or, you know, don't leave, you know, what were the words she used? She had kind of a humorous way of saying, you know, check it out again because there may be a day when I do need something. And she kind of made a humorous comment. And yeah, I think humor really puts people at ease.
Oh, I do too.
I think so too. Fanny again, because a lot of times when you have humor, it's sort of like soften the blow. Like if you're out someplace and you be driving or, I mean, you be walking trying to give on a curb or laugh about it and you say, well, you know, I can't see that anymore. So you have to tell me, where am I going? And then you start laughing about it. And then, you know, if you change the pace and the, so it won't be so serious. That really does work.
Duncan, this
yes.
is Peter.
Calling
hi.
In with our Thursday afternoon support group here. So
oh, hi, Peter.
Oh, great.
And I just wanted
so
to
so this is a group from the Colorado Center for the Blind.
Right. We've been on and we've been muted, but I wanted to give one or two of our members a chance to speak, perhaps. Is that okay?
Sure.
Sure. That's great.
I think Estelle had a comment.
Wonderful.
Hi,
hello.
Estelle.
This is Estelle, and I think one of the girls mentioned, one of the people mentioned this or something like this, but you've heard of the expression about the blind leading the blind. Well, that might be very important, and I was thinking that when you're in a situation and you don't know how to react or you're uncomfortable, it might be helpful to have a blind mentor.
I am not going to eat it.
Not just someone to talk to, but someone with you, attend an activity or a family function, and then the newly blind person would see and understand how the other blind person deals with these things if they had a mentor, somebody that could be with them.
Good idea.
I think that's very important. Yes. Thank you, Estelle. And that's something we can do within the NFB and certainly within the NFB senior divisions.
I think
is there someone else from the center group that wanted to talk?
Doesn't sound like it. They're all enjoying
okay.
the conversation.
Okay.
We will get critiqued now, Duncan. They'll tell us.
Yes. They'll tell us what we should have said.
What we should have said.
Since we are talking about humor, I will tell you a story about a woman who was in our program a number of years ago, and she just loved her. Once she found out she could be independent, she just embraced that, and she loved it, and she learned Braille, and she learned to use a white cane and all these things, and she went to... I think it was Costco with her brother, and she had her white cane with her, and he felt very uncomfortable with her having her cane, and he said to her, you know, I don't want to go in there with you with your cane. You don't need a cane. You're going to be with me, and so you can just leave it, you know, and I don't want to go in there with you with that, and so she said to him, well, I guess you're going to stay in the car then. And she took off and she went into the store. And, you know, I think he learned a lot about it. And we all thought it was so fun how she dealt with it because it sounded like she'd been having this conversation several times with her brother. And that's
that
something
was...
that comes up. People, how do they react to you now that you have a cane or a guide dog?
I think sometimes they feel like people will criticize them because here you are, a sighted person with a blind person, and yet this blind person still is trying to use their cane, wanting to use their cane, wanting to use their dog, and that maybe it makes them feel like, oh, gosh, people are going to think I'm terrible. And it isn't that, so then there has to be some, as Duncan said, communication is the key word here. There has to be some communication with the family member or friend. You know, I know that you're helpful, but I also need to use my cane or my guide dog. I mean, supposing this person has a heart attack, and there you are with nothing. No, no, I tell you, one time I've made a lot of mistakes in my life. One of my major ones was going to the airport, and we were in a car, and my husband was getting on a plane, and my uncle was driving, and we were dropping him off at the airport. And my uncle said, "Well, you don't need to take your dog. We're just going to be driving over there and back." Well, I said, "Okay," because it didn't seem to me like I'd be using my dog. Well, we dropped my husband at the airport, and on the way home, my uncle became very, very ill and had to stop the car and had to be taken to the hospital. I have never in my life since then walked out of this house without my white cane or my dog or both. I just, that's a hard way to learn the lesson, but I certainly learned it. So I don't think people mean, he didn't think anything of taking away my independence. He just thought, well, you know, you don't really need it. So it's always, I say this over and over and over, and I say it to myself. I don't just preach about it. We want to stay in control of our own lives. And once we start giving up that control, then you give up one thing and it's easy to give up another. And so none of us want to do that. And I don't think anybody on this call would ever do that, because you are here sharing your ideas and I'm getting ideas from everybody, and that's what staying in control is about. Other comments about family and friends?
Well, this is Sandy again, and we haven't talked about things from a grandparent perspective, but I have said to people before that I have a six-year-old granddaughter, and in these days of computer games, and they've got all these handheld DSs and all kinds of stuff, and when you're blind, you can't read those screens. I have no way to access that. So I just came back from a visit and found out that there are a couple of blindfold games that we were going to download and experiment with, because my daughter-in-law is a real computer whiz. And so I just sent her the blindfold games link and said, all right, tell me which of these games do you think Victoria would have an interest in, or that are age-appropriate for her. But then we got busy doing other things, and that didn't happen. But she did identify some, so when I go out again, we'll do that, and we'll get it done earlier. And the other thing that my son said was, next time you come, bring a deck of Uno cards, because she'll be ready to play cards. And we just don't
right.
think about those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And I know that people who become blind later on in life certainly don't believe that they can have positive kinds of interactions with their grandkids.
Those are great points, Sandy, and it is important. How many do any of you have grandchildren, and how do you handle those situations if you do have grandchildren? Young nieces and nephews.
They're unmuting.
Probably.
Oh.
Well, I do have grandchildren, but I don't do video games.
We don't either.
Do you play games with them?
Say again?
Do you play games with them?
Well, I will listen to them play games, but no, my grandkids, they love the what is it? I don't even know what these things are. They're like video game systems, you know, that they play on the television. So
right.
Yeah. So
right.
I don't get involved with that. But you know, I want to go back to something a lady had said a minute ago about maintaining control and not giving up that control. And what occurred to me is that anyone that would give up control for a bit of security, eventually you'll wind up with neither.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
That's very good. Very good.
Sometimes we have seniors who say they accept assistance when they don't need it because they think it will make the other person, whether that person is a family member or friend, it will make the other person feel bad. What does anybody think about that?
Well, Fanny here, I think you really can't worry about making the other person feel bad. I just don't think it would be, I guess, you know, it all depends on the situation, but I don't think I would really go home and making a person feel bad if it's something that they're going to do and that's really going to affect me and make my situation be a lot worse than what it is. So,
okay.
I don't know. I can't.
We can always decline gracefully and politely, and I think that is the key, is to always be thoughtful of what we are saying. Live in the moment. Be mindful of what you're saying at that time, and if you don't need the assistance, you know, just very politely, but you have to be maybe firm isn't the right word, but I think, you know, I'm like you. I don't want to make people feel bad, but on the other hand, I don't want to give up my independence so that they will feel better. So, but like I say, if we decline in a graceful manner and in a polite manner, I think they can accept that. If they continue to insist, which I know we've all had that experience, then sometimes you have to be a little more direct, if you will. And but, you know, like somebody wants to take you across the street you don't want to go across. I'm not going to let them take me across the street to make them feel better, that's for sure. Maybe that's an extreme example, but I don't think it is. I think if for any of us who walk around in any area and we're crossing a street, somebody's going to maybe come up and say, oh, you want to go across the street? Or they'll just grab your arm and start to take you across. Well, I don't think that is acceptable behavior. And I don't think we should accept that as good behavior.
Excuse me, you're talking about handling. That's another point.
Yes, I am.
Sighted people try and manhandle blind people.
Yep, you're right. And that's the word for it.
Mm-hmm. It happens, yes. So how do you deal with that?
Well, once again, I'm asking anybody, excuse me, let me show you this, or we can't do it this way.
Yeah.
No.
Let me ask you ladies this. Have you ever had this experience? You're walking either down the sidewalk or, let's say, you're in a department store, and all of a sudden someone grabs your cane and attempts
yes.
to guide you by your cane.
Yes.
How do you deal with that? And how polite should you be, or can you be, at that moment?
Well, this is Sandy, and when I've had that happen, I stop. I just won't let them do that, and I say, excuse me, I need that on the ground, and I need that under my control. So that's not a...
That's good, and you're
that's
being
good.
Direct, and you're not being rude.
No.
You know, but you are being direct. I think it does call for being very direct.
Particularly
and
that.
Stopping
I mean, that's
it.
Just...
That's
know,
terrible.
You can't pull me around like I'm on a... I'm the, hand, the opposite end of the wagon handle, you know?
Right.
People do that. I just heard about that
yes.
happening with one of our seniors recently, and unfortunately it still happens.
She made her first airplane trip by herself, pretty much by herself, and she said, I got all kinds of the strangest help, and one of them was they picked up my cane and wanted to guide me with my cane. And that that just is not acceptable at all.
No. I because I figure if I stop, you got to be yanking on that thing to get me to move.
Well, that's right.
Yeah.
And you're not going to do that.
Yeah.
I'd never thought about just stopping cold, but that's
absolutely.
Of course that is what you do. I just never thought it through. I've had a lot of things happen to me in my lifetime, but I've never had anybody that I can think of right off hand try to guide me by my cane.
Oh, wow.
I've had them come up and grab my dog's harness, and
yeah.
I stop them. I do the same thing. You may not touch the dog's harness. And they step back. I guess they think maybe the dog will bite them. I don't know. But
oh, no, I can't say that.
You cannot permit that, or your cane. That's what we are using. It'd be just like if we went out and tried to start their car or something, you know. Anyway, it's very interesting. We had the most wonderful student a number of years ago, and she had the attitude that you wish you could bottle and inject people with. She turned 89 when she was in our program, and she came for about 4 months, and she just took part in everything that we did. And one day she said, you know, this is a great adventure. Losing my sight and learning how to handle it, this is a wonderful adventure. If I hadn't gone blind, I would have never had this adventure. And I never heard anybody say anything like that before or since. She was the most, I don't know if I like the word inspiring, but she was inspiring to me because what a wonderful attitude. This was a brilliant woman who had traveled all over the world and just done so many things in her life, and she just looked at blindness as a new adventure. I thought that was wonderful.
This is Joanne
That's
from
great.
Georgia.
And she did go rock climbing and participated fully in our program.
Joanne, what were you going to say?
Yeah, I was going to say that's true. I find myself doing more since I've lost my vision than when I had vision.
Right. Good.
Yeah, and talking about grandchildren, my granddaughter, she's 5, and she thinks that I can do anything, and she'll tell
right.
me if she wants
great.
To play a game with me on her little, you know, little pad. She'll say, "Oh, you can do it," and she'll take my hand and she'll tell me where to tap and all of that.
Oh,
and we play
that's
musical
that's,
chairs and everything. So
that's
you know,
so cute. That
keeps me going.
That's great.
That's great. She loves her grandma. That's
yeah,
great.
I just went to her school. Her pre-K class, and I know enough Braille to read, so I had a touch and feel storybook,
mm-hmm.
and I read that to the kids, and now the staff wants me to come back and do something else before school is out.
That is just, those are the kinds of things that mold this generation. That is terrific, Joanne.
Yeah.
those kids
are. My experience has been that children really love Braille and love the concept of Braille, and that's very cool that you did that. So any other comments about grandparenting?
Well, we've surely gotten some good ideas today because I think we grandparents, we are certainly not so much in the digital age. I'm convinced people under the age of 30 are born with a special gene that relates to digital kinds of things, and we are all not in that generation because it comes so naturally to them. But that's terrific, Joanne, because your little granddaughter is learning that, by gosh, I can show Grandma how to do a lot of these things. So that's really fun.
Duncan, this is Ruth.
Hi, Ruth.
Hello, Ruth.
Hi, I've been here listening. I just wanted to sort of make a general comment, and that is, you know, maybe 25, 30 years ago, we didn't see a lot of people with a lot of walking aids like walkers or scooters or support canes. And now, you know, you see them all the time everywhere because people are using them. They're good tools. It helps people maintain their independence. And you see people with families, and you see people independently by themselves using all kinds of walking aids. And that's kind of what, you know, we hope that will happen, and the more we are out in the public and doing the things that interest us, using whatever tools we use with vision loss, you know, it can change the public attitude, because that's what we really have to do, is to be out there and be seen, and again, direct people on the kind of help that really would be helpful to you. You know, say to the people, if I need your assistance, I'll ask for it, and then you can decide if you want to, you know, give it to me. because people don't have to help you, too. I mean, it isn't just a given that people have to help you. They don't always,
right?
You know.
Right.
And so the more we're able to be involved in our communities, in our families, in our friends, and more of us are using these tools, too. So one can have vision loss and other kinds of disabilities, as we all age, we have these things that occur. And a lot of it is really figuring out how can I do the things that I did. And talking in a group like this can be very helpful, because what it a lot of times does, it just validates that what you think you can do, now you know you have the permission, you can try it. Try it and see if it'll work. And see if it doesn't work. Okay, maybe why isn't it working? I need to rethink it. And you'll come up with some solutions. It's okay to be different and to use different tools. And the last comment I guess I would make is that what I've observed over the years, because people have had vision and are losing it, they often want to continue to use the vision when it may not be so useful. And what happens to people is you get yourself into a posture, like you're bending down, looking, you know, at the chair or the countertop or what you dropped on the floor. And what happens is the people around you get afraid you're going to fall. And you might, because your posture has changed. So sometimes, you know, if you can help yourself not think about that you have to see it to be able to do it and to, you know, keep better posture. So that way you'll actually be able to do more things that you want to do. And if you can see it, great. And if you can't, okay, can I take the broom and find it on the floor? Or can I, you know, what can I do, you know, so that I maintain my posture so that I can do the things I want to do. And it's a lot of things. I mean, sometimes people say they can't dial their phone, and it's because they're bent way over trying to see the phone rather than to sit up straight and put their hand on the phone where it would be aligned with the phone, you know, and it's just people don't think about that.
Right.
Ruth,
good
I'm
point.
So glad you could join us today. Yeah. This is great. You've come up with some things we certainly have not thought of, and that's what's so wonderful about these groups, that these telephone conferences that we have. Everybody, have such good ideas that they're bringing. So,
yeah, they do. Now, in our groups, we also had some questions about when you meet a new person, how do you deal with shaking their hand? And I know Diane has a great thing that she does. If you wanted to explain that, Diane, I think that works really well. And
well, I learned this a long time ago. When you meet a new person that you've never met before, I've had people take my hand and reach it out to the new person's hand. I find that very invasive. Nobody does that anymore, but I have had that happen. So what I do to forestall that kind of an embarrassing experience, I say, oh, it's so nice to meet you, and I reach my hand out. I extend my hand, and they will always take your hand. And then you're not feeling embarrassed looking for their hand. So we have done
and
some
practice. And they're not feeling embarrassed either.
Exactly. You're not feeling embarrassed, and neither are they. So if you just put your hand out there and say, it is so nice to meet you, whatever else you want to say. Anybody else have any ideas on that?
Well, you know, you just reminded me of a funny situation that happened to me some years ago when I had met the mayor of Plainfield, New Jersey for the first time. Now, I didn't know that he was blind, and he didn't know that I was blind.
Oh, my goodness.
And when we were brought together, and, you know, he says, okay, Samson, this is Mayor Taylor. Mayor Taylor, you know, this is Mr. Carr. And we're reaching for one another. You know, we extended our hands, you know. And
that can happen. That can happen, Samson.
And finally, finally, the one guy, he had to take both our hands and put them together. And we both, the mayor and I, we just grabbed one another. We were just laughing like crazy.
I bet you were. That's a great story. That's a great story. And the fact that you could both laugh about it, that's what matters. That's really good, Samson. I like
that.
Absolutely.
It was a funny moment. You know,
Diane, Glenn Crosby.
Nice.
Hello, Glenn. How are you?
Well, I'm just getting in, so I'm doing good.
Great. Well, now, when this happens at the center with students that aren't necessarily seniors, and I say, well, it's nice to meet you, and I'll put out my hand, and, of course, they're blind. They don't know why I have my hand out there, and I'll say, let me shake your hand. And then they know that I have extended my hand. Let me shake your hand. Well, we may look around for each other's hand, but we laugh. We're all blind people, so it's not embarrassing. But I do that hoping that the student, and I think they do, then they realize that's one way. I said, let me shake your hand. And then they know I have my hand out there. So it's interesting. Anyone have any other comments?
Well, I was just one other thing here. You know, with the different assistive technologies, you know, that are out there today, it's a lot easier to be a blind American than it was 30, 40 years ago. Although I don't play video games with my grandsons, I do, however, use JAWS, and, you know, and which... it's a screen reader, and I'm sure everybody knows what that is. Then we have the Apple phones. You know, every smartphone now has a speech processor built in, which enables us to use the cell phones. And, you know, there's all kinds of the currency identifier and color identifier and so on. So it's a lot easier today to be a blind individual than it was some 30, 40 years ago.
Well, Samson, I think we would agree with that. It certainly is. More things talk, more things we can have access to. And so, no, that's right. It's just it's easier for everybody, but the advent of JAWS and, as you say, the iPhone, Android has a speech program. I haven't used it, but I know, and I think it's in other things. So it is helpful, no question. I'm still trying to accomplish the flat screen on appliances. That's another story. But we devise ways to use it. You know, we make up our own accessibility when it isn't built in. So
locator dots.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I'll have them on all kinds of things.
And,
that's right.
And, you know, that can really, just using some of these, you know, low-tech things like locator dots can change your relationships with your families and friends.
Right.
In that they are not having to come and say, oh, yeah, the oven's at 350, or, yeah, you're on medium-high heat, or whatever. Or set your laundry. So, you know, anything like that can help you be more independent is really great.
It puts everybody at ease where they,
mm-hmm.
you know, don't feel like they have to take care of us.
Susan Stanzel, I
yes,
have enjoyed my pen friend.
That
yes.
is my favorite tool, Susie.
That's on my washing machine and my dryer.
Yep.
Particularly.
They,
and my dishwasher.
Wonderful. And there's a new one out, a smaller version. And then there's a whole another one out we're going to bring to convention. And don't ask me the name. I don't remember. But it's about half the price of the pen friend. But it works the same way. And yeah, I agree with you. The pen friend is a great invention.
Well, I've had mine for, probably 4 or 5 years. And
yeah.
Made great use of it. And Curtis Chong said to me, you're a Braille person. Well, you can't Braille on your control of your dishwasher or your clothes washer.
Sometimes like, it won't, yeah.
It won't stick and it takes too much room. And
yeah, we have to be
quicker.
We have to be inventive, and we have to be willing to try. If one thing doesn't work, try something else, and you'll find something that works. Duncan and I say we're good in low tech, and
we're the queens of low tech.
That's right.
We got that high tech. No, you don't really want to get advice.
No,
from
don't
us
get
on
us
that,
involved in high tech, but low tech, we're good at that.
Oh, Susie Stanzel again.
Uh-huh.
A week
yes,
from today,
Susie.
I'm going to have my right hip replaced. And when this
Susie.
Is over and I get my cane back, I'm going to kiss that darn thing. I'm going to be so glad because I went to the Missouri Convention last weekend with my walker and Debbie Powell,
oh.
my friend, was kind of pulling the walker. And because there were people standing all over creation.
Sure.
And I didn't want to knock anyone down.
No.
You know, and it was very... I'm finding it very difficult to walk with a walker. So
yeah.
I'm going to be happy to get my cane back again, and I hope I certainly can walk around the National Convention like usual.
Yeah.
Well,
I hope
sure
that goes really well for
we
you.
We wish you really
Thank
good
you.
Luck with that, Susie. And
Thank you.
I know you'll welcome your cane back.
Well, I'll tell you,
yes, you
I guess
will.
Even going through the beginning of the medical community has just been such a struggle. This woman didn't think I could give her a UA by myself.
Oh, yeah. I know.
Oh, yeah.
The medical community.
She said, don't you need your daughter? And I said, I will know if I'm hitting the hat, for heaven's sake, not even a cup. I will know if I'm hitting the hat or the water. Anyway,
yeah,
it's unbelievable.
Our medical community is pretty uninformed.
Yeah.
That's
the
true.
Worst. The worst. Anyway.
Well, Susie, I want to make a comment because you brought up the white cane, and we've talked about it in different ways today. But, you know, using a white cane is a way of disclosing to the world that you are now blind or you have a vision loss. And so there are lots of issues around that and getting the courage up to use a white cane. We just had a senior who attended our full-time program, and she'd been very competently using her white cane. But it was such a wonderful thing that she went to a family reunion. This is after she graduated from our center, and was very nervous about it because she had never used a white cane around her family before. But she used her cane around her family, and it was such a relief to her. But it was a way of really disclosing, okay, yes, I am blind. And so lots of times issues with friends and family members come up once you start using a white cane. And I also want to put a plug in for our next group in, I believe, in May. Two staff members from the Colorado Center for the Blind, Peter and Wayne, are going to be talking about use of a long white cane.
Good.
So,
what date will that be?
May 18th. This is Ruth.
Oh,
Thursday,
Ruth,
May 18th.
Thank you.
Beautiful.
Ruth saved us.
Yes.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Good. Good.
And I do want to say that this call is being recorded, and our last call was also recorded, and that was a topic Art Shriver dealt with, which was dealing with medical professionals and
getting
medical treatment that you need and maintaining your dignity. So there are ways that you can get that information.
I'd be interested. How do you have any idea how to access that?
Yes, you can access it via telephone. The number is 712-432-1202.
Okay.
And then
the same
you use
code, I hope?
No, it's a little different than the one you dial to get into this call.
Oh, gosh, I better write this down.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, just a second.
This is good for us all to have.
Yes,
yes it
we
is.
Go back and listen to these because there's such valuable information.
And we've been doing this for, like, I think 3 years, so you can listen to any or all of them that were recorded. I think our first one or two had a little glitch, so I think we've done 15, but there's probably 16 or 17 recordings because we had a little glitch for the first couple. But we got better.
Okay.
So the number that you call on your phone to listen to this conversation, once it's up, it'll take a while to be up. I don't know how long, but it will be because it has been recorded. So it's 712. I thought you were ready. Sorry.
I've got that.
432-1202. And then you use the same access code, the 759-633.
Okay.
And then they will ask you for the access code number, and I think this is number, I'm going to say 17, or it could be 16 for this. I think it's 17
for this
call.
They'll ask you the number of the...
Yeah, and you just push in 17. If you push another number, you'll get another call, but you can, you know.
Okay.
I mean, they're all on our system, and that's how you listen to it. Or it is, it will be on our senior webpage, seniors@nfb.org.
Okay.
Well,
thank
now,
you.
And so that's, yes.
I'm glad Duncan and I, we didn't have, of course, I've already admitted we are not techie geniuses.
Well, neither
but
am
if
I
you,
so much.
So you're saying if you enter seniors at nfb.org, that
think,
will
yes,
put
it
you.
Should. I have to check that out for sure because I know that some people have had a difficulty with that. So then I call a techie person to find out what's why it isn't. But yes, it should be.
Okay.
And then it's like an MP3, or you can download the calls.
Or you can get somebody to do it for you.
Yes, yes. Whatever works.
Whatever
yes.
works. That's right.
Yes.
Okay, Ruth, thank you.
And I do want to just quickly announce one other thing. I know our time is almost up, but I do want to announce for the first time that the Senior Division is committed to helping people get training so that you can move on with your life. You can use these techniques, these non-visual techniques that we've been talking about, the cane, the white cane, the pen friend, and other things. So this year, for the first time, we are sponsoring a senior retreat. And it is going to be in October. It is going to be at Rocky Bottom, which is the South Carolina affiliate, has a place there. And details can be gotten. The flyer is going out hopefully today or tomorrow or very, very soon. And it will be it'll be listed in the Borough Monitor. It will be listed on our senior webpage to apply. There is a cost to the retreat, but it is available to people. It's a way to get training. It will be from October 8th to the 14th, so it's a full week, 5 days of training. And it may be something that in some areas, if there may not be a lot of training choices, that you as seniors will be able to work towards getting the funding and support, whether you get it for fundraising or through service organizations or through your state agency if they would sponsor. But it would be a way to network with other blind people and learn from others and to get some skill training so that you have a way to do the things and gain the confidence that you want to have. Diane and Duncan are fortunate. They are in Colorado, and they have the Colorado Center for the Blind, and their group is there. But if you're living in some other parts of the country, you may not have access to the same training opportunities.
Yeah,
so
we
can
really
look for the flyer
excited.
Coming. Yes, yes.
Wonderful, Ruth. We hope people will be able to take advantage of it because it will be a very, very good curriculum. As well as a lot of fun getting
yes.
to know people from across the country. And
yes.
we'll have blind people teaching blind people. That's what we do. That's what we say.
Mm-hmm.
I was interviewed a while back, and then she said to me, well, where did you learn to do these things? Well, I said, I learned most of what I know from other blind people. And I think if we thought about it, we could most of us say that too.
Mm-hmm.
Ruth, are you going to put that out on the mailing list for people that are in the seniors mailing list?
On the listserv, yes.
Yes, yes.
It'll be on the listserv, and we'll probably, I mean, we'll circulate it probably to all state presidents and to other, you know, listservs as well.
Wonderful.
Yeah, wherever
and if you
we
come,
can do it, yes.
Hopefully you're going to come to National Convention, and we'll be talking about it there.
Yes, yes.
In our senior division meeting and our senior seminar. So,
right.
Yeah,
Susie and I'm going to come to my first senior division meeting since I now don't go. I'm not going to computer science. They meet
well,
at the same time.
We'll be glad to have you.
Yeah.
Well, our
yeah,
priorities do change, you know.
Yeah.
yeah. That's right.
Since I'm
right.
not working, my whole life is different.
Right.
Yeah.
Well,
okay.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us. And we know that these are all things for us to keep talking about and supporting each other on all of these issues. And I hope I will see all of you at National Convention.
Take care. Thanks for joining.
Thank you, Duncan and Diane.
Bye-bye.
Tune in the 18th of May, the next call, May 18th, same time. Same number.
Okay.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.